The following is an excerpt from The Millionaire Mind, the follow-up to The Millionaire Next Door by best-selling author Dr. Thomas Stanley, also available from Simon & Schuster Audio.
How would you define the geniuses who have worked for you? They know more and more about less and less. John Parks, millionaire and C-student. If you ask the average American what it takes to become a millionaire, he'd probably cite a number of predictable factors. Inheritance, luck, stock market investments, and so on. Topping his list would be a high IQ, high SAT scores, and grade point average in school, along with attendance at a top college or university. It may be difficult to dislodge this cherished myth from our thinking, but my survey of self-made millionaires disproves it, as you will hear in this program. The statistics demonstrate that a minority of millionaires whom I surveyed achieved high test scores or grades, or went to top schools. These factors were probably useful to a small percentage of the millionaires, but most attained their high levels of economic productivity without those assets. Are they intellectually gifted? Somehow the publishing industry discovered that I was writing another book. Its trade journal, Publishers Weekly, reported that Stanley is working on his next book, The Millionaire Mind. He hasn't yet signed a publishing contract for it. This article generated considerable interest. But one caller, a senior editor at a major publishing house, did more than express interest in The Millionaire Mind. He asked if I could give him a short verbal summary of the work, and I did. He was particularly interested in the following. Most of the millionaires I have interviewed do not have a superiority complex. On the contrary, they are more likely to have one or more components of inferiority in their self-image. When I ask the typical self-made millionaire to tell his life story, he says, I was a C student in college. My college boards or SAT scores were nothing spectacular. I am only worth $10 million. I received a D in psychology. My story is not something you would be interested in reporting. I have a learning or reading disability. I flunked out of Wake Forest. I was held back in sixth grade. I only have a high school equivalency diploma. Not one law school accepted me. What do these self-deprecating millionaires have in common? During their formative years, some authority figure, such as a teacher, parent, guidance counselor, employer, or aptitude testing organization, told them, "You are not intellectually gifted." The editor expressed considerable interest in the work and suggested that I read a book which has been very insightful to my research. In the preface to his book Successful Intelligence, Robert J. Steinberg, again one of the most respected authorities on human intelligence, states, I'm a full professor with an endowed chair at Yale. I've won many awards, published over 600 articles and books, and been awarded about $10 million in research grants and contracts. I'm a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and am listed in Who's Who in America. Odd, then, that my greatest luck in life may well have been a failure. I bombed IQ tests when I was a kid. Why was that so lucky? Because I learned in elementary school that if I was going to succeed, it wasn't going to be because of my IQ. And just as low scores on tests of inert intelligence don't preclude success, neither do high scores guarantee it. What does Professor Steinberg have in common with most of the millionaires I have studied? They were degraded by someone or something during their formative years and school days. Both responded by outworking and eventually outperforming the so-called intellectually gifted. Steinberg also demonstrated considerable ingenuity by developing measures of various types of intelligence. Professor Steinberg dedicates his book to his fourth-grade teacher. Apparently, Mrs. Alexa did not pay much attention to IQ scores. As his mentor, she demanded that he become an A student, and he has been ever since. Professor Steinberg earned a BA degree, summa cum laude from Yale, and a PhD from Stanford. In the middle of writing this section, I took time out with my daughter, Sarah, to hear him speak at the University of Georgia. The program began at 3:30 p.m. on a lovely spring Friday. Normally, few students or graduate students attend lectures late on Friday afternoons. But this one was different. There was standing room only. No one was disappointed in Professor Steinberg's program. He is not only a fine writer, he is an excellent speaker. He points out that most successful people have great affection for their own selected vocation, as he does. But he is obviously creative as well, because he has published more than 600 articles. Professor Steinberg has enough unique ideas for 10 PhDs to be granted tenure at most colleges. Walking back to the car after the lecture, my daughter and I had a conversation. My advice to Sarah is echoed by the millionaires who responded to my survey. Read Steinberg's Successful Intelligence. Use it as a template for achieving your goals. Remember what he says. If you love your job and the topics you will write about, you're very likely to succeed. But you must work hard and use your creative and analytical intellect. Do you know how he has published more than 600 publications? He wrote 600 articles. Think a lot about your choice of topics. Work hard, do much research, write often. If you do, you will succeed. No matter how gifted you are analytically, you will not become successful unless you publish. And to publish, you must work hard at writing about creative and innovative ideas. People who give advice to young people about careers should all be required to read Steinberg's work. Success has many parents, and no single dimension or component fully explains it, not by a long shot. Young people can succeed if they capitalize on their strengths, and Steinberg has many great ideas about how people can enhance their probabilities of succeeding. His own story is a perfect demonstration of one of the important insights revealed about the millionaire mind in my survey. Most of the millionaires were not considered to be intellectually gifted, as determined by standard test measurements or school grades. The smartest kid in the dumb row. When Mr. James X. Patrick was in the third grade, a memorable thing happened to him. His teacher, Sister Eileen, a.k.a. the Punisher, divided the class of 30 students into three groups. Members of the first group were placed in rows 1 and 2. Sister Eileen designated these students as the smart kids. The second group filled up seats in rows 3 and 4. This group contained the average kids. Rows 5 and 6 were reserved for children the sister referred to as slow or dumb. How did Sister Eileen assign students to these groups? According to Mr. Patrick, she used the following criteria: penmanship, spelling, and turning in completed homework assignments on time. Are these the proper criteria to judge one's intellect? Not according to Mr. Patrick. He says, if her criteria were correct, I must have been the smartest kid in the dumb row. Perhaps he is correct. Today he has a PhD degree with distinction from a top university. He is a multimillionaire who owns and operates three businesses. He claims that he still cannot spell, and that no one but his secretary on a good day can read his handwriting. He is, however, diligent about getting his homework assignments completed on schedule. According to Mr. Patrick, teachers in elementary school are insensitive to the criterion called creativity. He asks, can you imagine Sister Eileen's reaction when I suggested adding a new letter onto the alphabet? Mr. Patrick is creative and has founded several innovative businesses during his career. He asks, what if all the potential inventors in America were pre-selected in the third grade by people like Sister Eileen? All those smart kids in row one with great spelling skills and fine handwriting would be expected to create tomorrow's great innovations and inventions. Thank goodness that formal pre-selections of this type are rare. But Mr. Patrick wonders about what happened to all his fellow members in the dumb row. Did these people believe that they were dumb? Did they give up early on any idea of achieving success in our economy? Mr. Patrick thinks that many do give up. He feels that his case story is the exceptional one. All my life, people have told me you can't. You don't have the aptitude. The odds are stacked heavily against you succeeding in your own enterprise. Believe Sister Eileen. If I did, I'd be collecting tolls out there on the bridge or driving a truck and paying tolls. Mr. Patrick never believed Sister Eileen's evaluation of him. In fact, even as a young boy, he questioned her authority. He always asked himself while sitting in class, How can penmanship and spelling be so important and the quality of ideas in a paper be totally unimportant? Then in the sixth grade, I remember book reports. All they were really were summaries of other people's ideas. But Sister Eileen and her clan just loved to assign book reports. These people were probably incapable of judging or dealing with original thought. Mr. Patrick is not alone. Most self-made millionaires who are successful business owners had their own experiences with the Sister Eileens of America. Questioning the norm, the status quo, and authority are hallmarks of the thinking of self-made millionaires and those destined to become affluent. Skills in writing, without original ideas, spelling, or penmanship, are not likely to make one rich. But people with these skills are given seats in the smart row. Mr. Patrick was, and still is, criticized and downgraded today. But even as a youngster, he learned to question people who sat in judgment of him. In reality, he became immunized to what fellow dummies took to heart. Others in the dumb row were defeated by Sister Eileen's judgment of their intellect, but not Mr. Patrick. He was inoculated. Sister Eileen's judgments were like small doses of antibodies. When he had a bad evaluation at school, he would go home and build a model airplane or make a new design with his Erector set. His parents responded to his finished products by telling him, "You are mechanically inclined, are very creative." And later, in high school and college, it was Mr. Patrick, the D and C student in English and foreign languages, who received A's and B's in his major. He always felt that the A English students had few really novel ideas. Also, in his estimation, they lacked any aptitude in math and science. He constantly told himself that these people would be humbled someday by the harsh realities of the world outside the classroom. In the real world, who succeeds? People who have built up immunity to pain. For Mr. Patrick, his immunization started with Sister Eileen's dumb row designation. What about Mr. Patrick's classmates who were always placed in the smart row? How do they handle a negative employee review or having their jobs eliminated? They've never before had to deal with authority figures who place them in the dumb row. Who is better able to deflect criticisms of their innovative ideas, behavior, and thinking? Mr. Patrick and his type. The ones who have a track record of telling critics to jump in the lake and who are motivated by people who downgrade their innovative thinking. I have to wonder how many thousands of Mr. Patricks were inspired by a recent Wall Street Journal article on this topic, and I would be especially interested in learning how many underlined a key paragraph. Children who are better at mathematics, design, or music than reading and writing may tune out early lessons. Children whose good verbal skills earn them diplomas from prestigious schools sometimes turn into adults who speak beautifully but have nothing to say. What about those who didn't accept Sister Eileen's intellectual segmentation model? Why did they refuse to accept the label of inferiority? Some found an enlightened mentor. Others had parents who encouraged them, motivated them to succeed. Many millionaires have plain old-fashioned tenacity. They think of the Sister Eileens of the world merely as inferior opponents. Mr. Patrick was tickled that he proved his opponent wrong. For several years after he became a multimillionaire, he carried in his wallet a short version of his financial statement. On top were the words, "Smartest kid in the dumb row." What really counts? Tenacity and leadership ability. If our traditional measurements of an individual's potential for success, high test scores and grade point average in school, are not reliable predictors of who has the millionaire mind, what are the factors that count? Millionaires possess two essential attributes, tenacity and leadership ability. Speaking of tenacity, Dave Longaberger recently passed away. His long career as a successful business owner could not have been predicted by some of his grade school teachers. It seems that Mr. Longaberger was held back three times in elementary school. He was 21 before he finally graduated from high school. His poor performance in school was partially due to the fact that he had epilepsy and a significant stuttering problem. It doesn't seem possible that a fellow who was left back three times in school could eventually become a multimillionaire. How many of the 7,000 people he employed were left back even once in grade school? How many would want to work for a guy who didn't graduate from high school until he was 21? But realistically, I doubt that any one of the 7,000 cared about class rank. They wanted to work for a man on whom they could depend. Who cares if the fellow paying your salary was not numero uno in school? What qualities and experiences do millionaires who were academic underachievers have in common? Most often, they started working early in their lives. While their self-esteem may have been tarnished at school, it was often enhanced by working part-time. Mr. Longaberger got his first job at the age of 6, working at a store as a stock clerk. But he and most of his fellow self-made millionaires developed and then demonstrated a certain tenacity. One has to be tenacious to overcome stuttering, epilepsy, and being held back repeatedly. He also had parents who motivated and inspired him to overcome his shortcomings. Enlightened parents tell all their children, "You can achieve if you work hard." Hard work is a better predictor of success than grade school experiences. How many of Mr. Longaberger's customers, who last year purchased more than $700 million of his product, were influenced by his performance in grade school? I'll never buy a Chrysler product. Why is it? You say that you just cannot even think of purchasing a motor vehicle made by Chrysler, and you have every justification for your attitude. Perhaps we have little faith in a corporation that allowed an academic underachiever to become its leader. Yes, Robert A. Lutz, former president and vice chairman of Chrysler Corporation, was 22 years of age when he finally graduated from high school. 7 years later, he graduated from college with a bachelor's degree. So forget about it. You don't care that Chrysler makes great products. You only buy cars from companies headed by Phi Beta Kappa members. Many of our millionaires, like Mr. Lutz, are not beaten down by this early lack of academic achievement. Like most, his strength had something to do with his relationship with one or both of his parents. I'll bet he had a kind and supportive father. Perhaps that's why he dedicated his fine book to his dad. Are you like Mr. Lutz's dad? Or would you give up encouraging, mentoring, and supporting your son or daughter if he or she were still in high school at the age of 21? I hope not. Like most millionaires, Mr. Lutz had some great mentors. And the U.S. Marines taught him something about discipline, leadership, and integrity. He later went on and received an MBA. When he was president at Chrysler, many of his subordinates probably had outstanding records in high school and were accepted to many colleges. But these same honor graduates were now working for Mr. Lutz. It's difficult to predict success using academic measures. In the best tradition of the American economy, Mr. Lutz was made president because he was best at that position. He rose over others because he was a leader of people. No matter that those people were considered intellectually gifted or not, they were inspired by a leader. A leader knows how to maximize the productivity of people and other resources, and Lutz proved this ability time and time again. Obviously, Mr. Lutz never believed that his underachievements in high school were precursors of his entire future, or he would never have had the guts to run Chrysler. Nor would he have had the guts to tell his readers that he finally graduated from high school at 22. In any other society, Mr. Lutz might have sealed his fate with his academic performance in high school. But what is considered to be an irreversible trait in China, Japan, England, India, and other countries is reversible in America. We are a nation of comeback kids. Some just take a bit longer to finish the course that will enhance their economic productivity. Early failures, dismal classroom performances, disastrous academic records, and dreadful SATs will defeat those who allow these academic measurements to dishearten their souls. But if one keeps working toward lofty goals, one can and will succeed in America. Luck has nothing to do with it. You are only lucky that you live in America, especially if you plan on being a comeback kid. All A's, all leaders? If we just decide to follow the cultural stereotype, we would automatically assign all senior leadership roles to those who were straight-A students in grades pre-K through 12, were straight-A students in college, scored a perfect 1600 on the SAT. All the rest of us could just go to work for these leaders. But being perfect in school does not translate into becoming a high-performance leader. because analytical intelligence is not a strong correlate of leadership ability. In a well-documented review of extensive research on this relationship, Fred Fiedler and Thomas Link concluded, "Cognitive ability tests have been notoriously poor predictors of leadership performance. Relations between intelligence and leadership and managerial performance account for less than 10% of the variance. Even these low correlations are likely to be overestimates of the true relationship. Leader intelligence under certain conditions correlates negatively with performance." Unfortunately, counselors rarely tell students that 90% of the variation in leadership performance is not explained by standardized intelligence measures. How many kids gave up on themselves early in the game of life because they did poorly in school or ranked low on the SAT totem pole? Perhaps they should be told, "You still have a chance. You may have to work harder, but you may also have the ability to lead other people." It is the hope that they can succeed that motivates people to do so. Take away hope, and what's left is one more economic dropout or a marginally productive person. If you have both leadership qualities and tenacity, you may eventually outpace all the whiz kids in your class. That is exactly what many millionaire respondents have actually accomplished. What millionaires really learned in school and college. Many parents with children in high school contact me about academic issues. They may be very dedicated to their kids, but they often worry themselves and the children to the point of panic. One woman was considering legal action against a school because her child was not selected for the so-called TAG program, that is, talented and gifted. She felt strongly that her son was both talented and gifted. Only about 1 in 5 students qualified for TAG, and admission was based, in part, on standardized test scores. Other factors included grades received in core courses taken in middle school. Mom was having bad visions. She worried about the stigma of being a member of OTAG, other than talented and gifted. Let's see, in a sophomore class of 433 students, 20% are in TAG, and 80%, or approximately 346 students, are OTAGs. Just because this woman's youngster was labeled an OTAG doesn't mean that he won't grow into a highly productive adult. I worry that if we label an impressionable youngster this way, he may never live up to his potential. He may believe that he has no talents or gifts, and he may assume that only the gifted will succeed in life. Labels often have a way of activating behaviors that are congruent with the designations. In this case, Mom strongly believed that her son's future rested upon a label, but that would only be true if she believed it so. And if she believes that her son will grow up to be a failure, he may pick up the message and act accordingly. But life is not one short race. It is a marathon of marathons. Labels come and go. If you believe that you can succeed in life in spite of degrading labels that predict your failure, you are likely to win most of the marathon. This is the common experience among millionaires. The large majority report that at some point or points in their lives, they were labeled inferior, average, or mediocre. But they did not allow critics to forecast their future achievements, and they overcame their label of so-called inferiority. This is the message I gave to Mom. I also told her something else. The process of overcoming labels like OTAG makes the recipient stronger. It is like adding titanium to steel. It makes steel many times stronger than it is alone. Only a minority of America's top business leaders, attorneys, and physicians report that they were never once labeled as being inferior or even worse. Not everyone can become the valedictorian of his or her class. All the others still have many years and countless opportunities for achievement. Mothers and fathers who consistently tell their children they can succeed are likely to produce offspring who are productive adults. So this woman is better off changing her beliefs. She can save the money she earmarked for legal fees and use it to hire a tutor for her son. Tell him that he can and will achieve if he works at it. It is unconscionable to write off the future of a 16-year-old student because of a label. I asked millionaires about their high school and college experiences. Did all of them graduate in the top 1% of their college classes? Hardly. About 2% of the millionaires surveyed indicated being in the top 1%. It isn't usually the very top graduates who become economically successful, but it isn't those who graduate at ground zero either. Millionaires also report that they were not A students in college. In fact, only about 3 in 10 reported receiving a greater percentage of A's than either B's, C's, D's, or F's. About 90% graduated from college. Overall, their GPA was 2.9. Good, but not outstanding. Almost all of the millionaires stated that their school and college experiences somehow influenced them in becoming productive adults in later life. But some experiences were more important than others, much more important than grades and labels. For the large majority, developing a strong work ethic was an influence. Nearly all of the millionaires rated this experience as influencing them to become economically productive adults. When millionaires evaluated the work ethic issue, they were not just referring to studying and attending classes. Many had part-time jobs while attending school, and many also spent considerable time learning how to make accurate judgments about people. This learning process was enhanced through the many social interactions and activities they participated in on and off campus. Some might consider such socializing to be unproductive in an academic setting, but it seems to be a key factor that separates those who become skilled at judging other people and those who cannot. There is a rather clear negative correlation between high grades earned in college and the millionaire's self-reported high ability to make accurate judgments about people. So it may be true that all work makes John a dull boy, and it also has something to do with John's inability to read other people accurately. The most economically successful people discussed in this program do many things well. Others may be analytical geniuses, but they come up short on people skills, or vice versa. If you aim to achieve wealth, it's best to learn multiple skills and qualities, work hard, socialize, enjoy people. Consider the school and college experiences that many millionaires believe were important foundation stones of their successes. It is more than studying a specific course in school or college, or high grades, rank, and SATs. The really big influences have generic labels such as strong work ethic, effective time or resource allocation, judgment, tenacity, and empathy. Surmounting obstacles and forging armor. Did our millionaires attain this status in spite of some obstacle or perceived handicap, or because they had the experience of compensating for their deficiencies? I have discovered that most self-made millionaires were confronted with one or more significant obstacles in their life. Without overcoming these potentially devastating roadblocks, they would not have become economically productive. It was the struggle, the hard journey, that gave them the foundation for becoming successful. It's unfortunate that most non-millionaires accept the negative evaluations given them by authority figures. Most people who bomb the third-grade IQ test, the SAT, and other measurements accept their fate. They capitulate even before they reach voting age. To them, inferior grades and other low scores automatically translate into a lifetime of low economic productivity. Our self-made millionaires choose another path. They discredit the authority figures who attempt to degrade them, often repeatedly, during their lifetime. They had the insight, courage, and audacity to challenge the assessments made by teachers, professors, amateur critics, and the Educational Testing Service. Self-made millionaires seem to have an interesting immune system. I'm not talking about their ability to fight off infectious diseases. I'm referring to their mental strength. They have an acquired ability to deflect even the harshest evaluations by some of the nastiest critics. This mental armor plate was initially forged during their salad days. Over time, their inoculation system grows in strength. Why? Because even in their later years, these millionaires constantly counter negative evaluations by various critics and authority figures. Even steel cannot be hardened unless it's hammered, and it's no different with people. Self-made millionaires report that degrading evaluations and comments by certain authority figures played a role in their ultimate success in life. Hammering built the antibodies they needed to deflect criticisms and temper their resolve. Forging resolve. How did people who are successful today acquire their armor plate during their formative years? Preliminary evidence suggests that one's ability to overcome downgrading comes from several sources. Most first-generation millionaires are the products of loving, caring, and well-adjusted parents who were rarely in divorce court. Most marriages lasted the full term. Contrary to what the popular press believes, most self-made millionaires did not grow up in a pressure cooker home environment. Thus, the children who became economically successful adults were never told by their parents, "With these grades in high school, you will never amount to anything. If you don't get high grades in school, you will turn out to be a loser. With SAT scores like these, your only shot is to go to a community junior college." Parents of economically successful people are much more positive. The parents' support and constructive suggestions provided a foundation for their children's armor plate, and these parents never built psychological barriers to future success in their children's minds. Their fathers did not abuse them, and their parents did not constantly pressure them to excel, excel, excel through negative cues. When today's self-made millionaire brought home a bad report card many years ago, their parents typically said, "You can do better. Figure out a plan to get you back on track. I'll work some problems with you. I know of a great tutor who will help you master these topics. I always had problems with this topic, but you just have to work through it. It took a mathematical genius a lifetime to invent calculus, so don't be discouraged if you are not on top of it overnight." And then, the long lecture. So what if your classmate Brian has all A's and will be the valedictorian? He studies day and night. He has zero friends and no extracurricular activities. I'll hire you, Todd, not Brian. You're a good B student, president of your class, and a varsity athlete. You're well-rounded. That's why you will succeed. I'll bet Brian will be working for someone like you one day. Don't let your class rank dictate what you can do with the next 50 years of your life. If your teachers and guidance counselors were that great at predicting the future, they would all be millionaire stock pickers on Wall Street or top-ranked bookmakers in Las Vegas. What did Todd gain from this message from an authority figure? Armor plate. Todd has learned how to deflect and protect himself from those who will attempt to degrade his future level of productivity. Who is more likely to become an economic success in the future? Is your guest Brian, the straight-A student, who was voted the most intellectually gifted? Not according to my studies of self-made millionaires. Brian has never developed the armor plate needed to succeed in the world of commerce. In the commercial world, one can work day and night for years and still go bankrupt the next year. In the commercial world, you can write the most brilliant business plan as part of a loan application and still be turned down for a commercial loan. Yes, turned down by a dozen bank officers at a dozen banks. Bank lending officers, as one millionaire defined them, are a convention of Dr. No's. Who would be more likely to deflect the negative evaluations of 12 lending officers and have the audacity to keep asking until the loan was approved? I will bet on the Todds of America. In the process of interviewing thousands of self-made millionaires, I have found that their pet ideas have all been turned down at one time or another. Many have been turned down dozens of times. They just move on to the next lending establishment. They have been conditioned from childhood to discount the critics who say that their plan for the future won't work. For them, it's merely a matter of time and some effort to find an enlightened lender. When I ask self-made millionaires whether they have recently attended a high school reunion and what their most notable impressions were, the answer usually is, "The smartest kids, the stars from my high school class, don't seem to be doing so well today." Most millionaires will tell you they feel a bit uncomfortable at these reunions because of the incongruities. In the vast majority of cases, the students designated most likely to succeed, the intellectually gifted, the ones the teachers bet on to be most successful, are no longer in the front of the pack. Who is in the lead? Not the Bryans, but the Todds.